Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, a special episode. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And folks, we are here. Your regularly scheduled databank brawl show is taking a little break, a little vacation, and we're here to review Alphabet Squadron by Alexander Freed. Yep, the book came out a long time ago, but it fell off our rotation. We were about to read it as a team. We don't sit together. Joseph reads me a chapter and I read him a chapter. We're going to read it, and then Black Spire came out. We wanted to get kind of more caught up with that, but we're back here for Alphabet Squadron, Joseph. We're going to really go into this old school, new school Star Wars book.
Yeah. There's a lot going on with it. We also want to remind you that today's podcast, even though it's not Databank Brawl, is still brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. It is hard to decide what to recommend during a book review. No, it's not. We're going to recommend Alphabet Squadron by Alexander Freed. If you haven't listened to it yet, we should also also warn you, this is going to be a spoiler full review. So if you want to wait and listen to this first, go download it. Get your free audiobook today. Go to audibletrial.com/4center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4center for a free audiobook. All right. This is a very interesting novel, we should say right off the top. It is explicitly the first novel in a trilogy.
Right, which when it was, I think it was originally first announced, I didn't get the sense that it was one, but they had to have known where the story ends.
Absolutely.
And then it had the tie-in comic written by Jody Houser, TIE Fighter, which I have read all five issues. I definitely need to go back and read it now, because I read it before I had read this.
Okay, it's basically about the shadowing the villains of the piece up to a point, right?
And a lot of the villains, the characters in TIE Fighter comic... Grandmother is in this one. A lot of the other ones, not really necessarily.
Right.
At least yet into the, you know, we'll see where the other books take us.
Right, right. Yeah, because shadowing, it makes sense now to me why they would do that, that shadowing is kind of this large group that's been around for a long time, has had a rotating cast of pilots, right? So you can tell stories within that and really build shadowing up. So let's just go to big picture reactions. This is a book that is about the pilots. It's called Alphabet Squadron. I remember when Jennifer first read us this news that it was coming out. We're like, how are we going to feel about that? Like, we all love A-Wing, B-Wing, Y-Wing, X-Wing, U-Wing, but is Alphabet Squadron a little too on the nose? How is that going to be? Set right after Return of the Jedi, pretty quickly after, in the first month after Return of the Jedi. And like I said, the first part of a trilogy, so kind of a lot to make it unique within the current canon of Star Wars storytelling and Star Wars novels. So what was your big picture reaction? Did you love it? Like it?
I found myself really loving it at parts and overall really liking it. There at times I felt was, you know, a few extra pages in it. It was over 400 pages. It's not a long book by any means, but...
But it's a little longer than a lot of the canon novels have been floating around 300. So if you're just kind of comparing it to other Star Wars experiences, it is a slightly longer read.
So I felt a couple times like... All right, let me move to a next bigger plot point or next bigger reveal or next part of the story. But along the way, this journey, I really, really started to love Alexander Freed as a Star Wars writer. I'm familiar with his Rogue One novelization. I did not read the first Battlefront Twilight Company novel. We've talked about it. It's on our list to go back and try. because I can totally see, because that one's about troops on the ground. This is about...
It's on my bookshelf.
You know, people in the air, troops in the air. And I think he really does a great job. And I really loved a lot of things he brought to it. And in another book, and you know, you can't help but think of Aftermath and think of another book right after this great watershed moment in our fandom, the Battle of Endor, and very little mention of those characters. They come up, Mon Mothma, Leia, they're there, don't get me wrong, and General Skywalker, but you got to tell a story without using those pieces, and he succeeds really well.
Yeah, I think so too. I would agree with the one sort of minor criticism that, it probably boils down to even just a taste thing, that there are a couple parts of the book where I think I wanted my foot on the gas a little bit in terms of the paying tribute to the adventure serial part of Star Wars. Because I loved a lot of what was going on with the characters, but there were some moments where I felt like, all right, every detail of this description of what's going on in the character's mind, I like, but I think I'm pretty clear on where the character is internally, and I want another event to happen.
Yeah.
And for me, it felt like, maybe a little bit of tightening up would have been to my taste, a little bit, kept my foot on the gas. But that said, I loved all of it. And in particular, a couple of particular things I love. Alexander Freed is great at writing action, and he's great at making you feel it. That was one of the things that was so amazing about Rogue One, is like, it's easy to just write like, they've gotten beaten around and they're in pain. But when you're like, when you can, he can put you in, like, you're in a cockpit and you're being thrown around and that strap is eating into that shoulder and it's been wounded before, and you know the exact amount of G-force pressure that's going to, you can start to feel that and start to ache. He's so good at those action details that tell the story of action, but also tell you the human cost of action.
Yeah.
So he's great at that adventure serial stuff and making it feel gritty and real. This book was just really great about spending a lot of time introducing new characters and really getting into their internal life in interesting ways.
Really good job. The way they come together and bond as a unit.
Or don't bond.
Yeah, great point. Is there. And going back to the way he describes battles, having just read the second Thrawn, or the Thrawn series, I should say, Timothy Zahn, he gets so detailed. We keep talking about it. 3 degrees to the right, and then they fire. And he does it in a wonderful way that's for those people like that. I get a little lost in it sometimes. This is just as detailed, but in, like you said, an emotional way. So I'm in the battle. I'm there, and everything's going. There's a lot of technical talk, but it really moves for me, and I don't feel, here we go. You know, honk your horns, everybody. We got, you know, the technical readouts of an X-Wing in battle. This has, like you just said, the emotional feel of it in a very detailed fashion. Love that. Yeah, and I was going to go somewhere else, and I totally forgot.
The interior life of the characters we were talking about?
Yeah, yes. Oh, thank you. It made sense to me that he pulled that off so well, because one of my little things of Rogue One, the movie, is the crew comes together. I don't feel as though they got to connect and have the time, and I don't feel as connected to them, though it all pays off in the end. But that's a movie. You got a short amount of time.
Right.
In the novel, I'm blown away by, wow, everything is on, even the disagreements, this and that. And it makes sense that he's the author that did that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think one of the things about this sort of internal life that is powerful and makes it feel like new and fresh and different to me is it is so specifically not just a collection of characters. It is pilots and soldiers, right?
Yeah.
It is people who only have so much power. Yeah. They're not the Mon Mothmas. They're not the Leia Organas. You know, they're certainly not Jedi. They're people who have real fragility.
Yeah.
But they have that same drive to, like, I want to contribute, or I don't want to contribute. I don't want to be here, but I'm trapped. Or
yeah,
I love the thrill of what I'm doing, but I don't believe in it, or vice versa. And you get all of those things that feel very real. I have never served in the military, obviously. I say obviously, yeah. If people have listened to the podcast a lot, it would have come up. but I know I saw on social media people responding to this depicts, I think, a lot of ways, the kind of things that you go through when you live your life in that combat could come up at any time.
Right.
And that you need order. Mm-hmm. And you need trust, but you also need to kick back and let go. And what does it feel like to be in the moment of, this might be just another adventure that I'm having that turns into a story to make peace with the horror of it, or I could die.
Yeah.
I could die without even knowing it's coming, or I could try to maneuver myself into the battle so I could feel, even though if nobody else ever knows that what I was doing when I died was worth it. Like all those kind of details that just for me help me open my mind to what it is to be a pilot or a soldier.
It's that kind of storytelling, I think, is needed, and it's come up in other areas, but this is a real good example of why I feel it's needed. What you're saying is, in the beginning of the story, there's some moment, you know, they're losing the pilots, not X-Wing pilots, but just they're losing pilots to defending the Hellion Dare, rebel ship, and Shadow Wing's picking them off. But they also know some of the Shadow Wing names, right? Or they say have nicknames for them. And it was stunning because that's Star Wars, right?
Right.
Dogfights, X-Wings exploding. Yay, Porkins, poor Porkins. But then you get to see what happens when they go back and land, and they got to bury these pilots' memories, really, only, obviously. Yeah. And what it goes through. And you and I mentioned this off air, and then I've seen it pop up in other places. The Battlestar Galactica remake show vibes are very strong.
Yeah.
Very, very strong, especially like season 2 stuff. But it keeps coming back to that point of, we grew up just throwing our Kenner figures on the ground and Luke saves the day. But, you know, Luke in this story is like, some people are like, I already might have magic powers. I don't know.
That's why he's always winning.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I already took down a Star Destroyer, like that kind of stuff. Almost to the Legends of Luke Skywalker book again. And I love that they don't have those powers. This isn't the Force. It's a thing, but even like we go through the you know, we're not too far away from the Emperor saying, nah, they were like a small little cult group. They didn't even affect the galaxy. What are you talking about?
With the Jedi? Yeah.
Yeah, what are you talking about? So I love that it's them. It's dealing with them on that intimate ground level.
Yeah, yeah. I think it gives them such a great personality and life. And in a way, it feels strangely morally responsible.
Yeah.
In Star Wars storytelling. This is kind of a jokey way to say it, but it is almost like hashtag justice for Porkins. Like,
right.
Those characters that blow up so the heroes can live.
Yeah.
Are real. And totally. Every one of them has a past, life, dreams, stories.
It treats that all very realistically and respectful indeed. It really does.
Yeah. So I think that was one of the big things that I took away from it. And then the other big picture reaction is the state of the galaxy, that it remains from this perspective of pilots, like kind of the highest up authority that we really get to hear from, who maybe has a sense of the bigger picture stuff, is Harrison Dula.
Right.
But this is set in this very specific time, and you're really learning the state of the galaxy. Some stuff in here that, like, oh, wow, I never really thought of the Empire's perspective in the build-up to Endor, when the rebels are getting more ships and more allies, and they're attacking, and they're not an insurgency. They're a constant threat to the Empire building up to Endor. And what does that do to the psychology of TIE fighter pilots? And, like, all sorts of great State of the Galaxy stuff that was both new and then dovetailed with Aftermath and with the story from Battlefront 2 video game, you know?
Oh, very well. And I think really did a good job setting up some of the stuff in Aftermath, which is, you know, set a little bit after this, and we'll see where the series. I don't expect any kind of crossover, but there's one Imperial commander. They mentioned Sloan, and there's another one,
Moff Pandian?
Yes. I believe. You win that round, sir. And that's a character in Aftermath who dies in the first book. So now we know, you know, all that's still coming, but it still all fuels everything I'm reading here. I'm like, I can see this all going to the Battle of Jakku, you know, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah, yeah. And when it's a trilogy, it's exciting.
Yeah.
To go like, is that where it's going to end up?
Is where it's going to go?
Yeah. We don't know.
Yeah, and so, you know, sorry, there was a little reference of how, yeah, up until the first Death Star, and even after, it was, we were putting down fires of insurgency, and then we had to fight. When it became a war with the Rebel Alliance. And
We were constantly, like you, waiting for the alarm to go off because you were coming here to blow us up.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that. We're going to dive into some different perspectives. Mm-hmm. But first, I want to talk about just where it sits right now in modern canon, because many Star Wars fans are really crying out for new and standalone, right?
Yeah.
How does this sit for you? Because part of it feels to me incredibly fresh because it is brand new characters, brand new perspectives. But it is really relying a lot on existing modern canon.
Yeah.
So does it feel more new or more old? Does it answer that call for the standalone and the fresh?
It does for me in a way. It does, because I know the X-Wing Rogue Squadron stuff's really popular back in the Legends stuff. I played some of the games. I didn't read the books as much. So it scratches that itch of the pilots and getting to know and all that stuff. But as far as what you're talking about, the timeline, we don't have the Wedge. We don't have any of that. So it feels so wonderfully new to me. And a couple times I was like trying to look for specific or thinking maybe some specific insights into things I know. And we got them, but not the way I thought. Like, there wasn't a chapter where suddenly Wedge shows up. And Wedge is an aftermath, so he's there. But you know what I mean? Like, and I don't need it always to be Wedge. But, like, there wasn't, like, the you're on a mission with Captain Solo. None of the General Solo. There's none of that. And so it seems completely new to me, but turns the lights onto some of the shadows of the stories I know and goes, hey, this was happening. This is happening. And I talk a lot about how I don't always like, well, around the corner from the tree was a sniper. Where
the forced decomplification of Star Wars, yes.
I don't necessarily like that. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. This was not that at all. This was just, this war is big.
Yeah.
And so I felt, and I was completely, it was completely new for me.
Yeah. You know how, I didn't think about it this way until we were talking about it, is I think that our characters have their own path, and they are affected by existing canon, but they are not affecting existing canon.
Yeah.
Like, I get the sense that through this whole trilogy, they're going to have their battle with Shadow Wing that is their part of this war. And it's not going to be the answer to And that's why Luke went to this planet to look for this artifact. And it's not going to be like, and they're the ones who shot down the Inflictor, the Star Destroyer that Rey, like, maybe there'll be those little details, but you know what I mean? It doesn't feel like it's leading to setting anything up or explaining anything.
Yeah.
These are characters with limited power, and they're going to be affected by the reality of the galaxy, but they're living their life, having their adventure.
Right. Yeah. No, well said about, you know, not affecting canon. And then, because Aftermath, which I love the series, has that feel, right? This is, you're learning, especially after Force Awakens. This is after Force Awakens, and we're like, oh, that planet Jakku, and I got caught up in what this all means for Episode 8 and Episode 9, and it still could, but, you know, like, I was like, I wonder if they're going to mention Gallius Rax in Episode 8, and they still could in 9, but then we don't, this isn't about that, and it's good to be released from that.
Right, and there could be a plaque somewhere in the background of Episode 9 that the story group's in puts in for a while, Lark, right? But it's not like, exactly. I really just love how much the pilots and I guess the New Republic and the Empire are also just telling us the story of the state of the galaxy, because it's just affecting their day to day with, like, are we going to keep this war going?
Yeah.
It really gets, whereas Aftermath had that, that were interludes all over this galaxy to show you kind of the state of confusion, this had this great, just putting in, what would it be like to be right after this big war ended, except for did it? And we're still almost in the question of different people have like, no, we're just mopping up. And other people are like, no, we're going to be mopping up for years, you know? Years. And we're going to talk a little bit more in themes, like they talk about it being in the shadow of Palpatine and that. But just in terms of state of the galaxy, I felt the state of the galaxy rather than feeling like I was told the state of the galaxy.
Oh, absolutely. Because the fact that they are kind of in their own little bubble of this war, and there's the big events that happened, but the characters, and it's like, there's this big thing where it's like, you were the Rebel Alliance, now you're the New Republic, and what does that mean, that switch? And Hera's definitely Rebel. She's Hera.
Oh, yeah.
And you got, what's the guy, Adnan?
Karen
Adnan, yeah.
Siren Adnan? I have not looked up how to pronounce these, so hey, get that audiobook and tell us how to pronounce some of these names.
Let us know. He's the intelligence officer. He's the Elon Sleazebagano.
He's
of
the Barisaur,
And how he's trying to, you know, he's kind of with Mothma on this, the idea of like, New Republic's not going to have a big military, we got to win through different wings, and that was an interesting look at the Rebel Alliance post the fireworks on Endor.
Yeah, I think it's a good way also to section them off, this idea that, they're ships, they're a squadron, but in theory, they're supposed to be intelligence, not military, which is an interesting way to tell the story and keep it a little bit separate, maybe from some of the the big canon that we know. So I thought it'd be fun to just kind of dive into the main characters, discuss general reactions, which characters we responded to, what parts of their story, and also if the character matches the ship, because that's part of the game. That's the title. Yeah. It's the name of their squadron. It's the image. Part of this is just all this deep stuff, but it's also just trading in on, man, what's your favorite ship? They're all cool. What do you want to play in a video game, right?
Yeah.
And the book is incredibly accurate to the canon we've been told, and like to viscerally experience. Like when they're writing, like, the Y-Wing's slow, but it can take a lot of abuse. I'm like, I know. It happens to me in Battlefront 2. Yep. It's been happening to me for years.
Oh, yeah. The fact that the crew, there's a lot of like, you shouldn't fly all these ships together. There's a reason we have squadrons of A-Wings and B-Wings.
They're going to turn into each other. Yeah. All right. So let's just start with the beginning with Quell. Now, again, I meant to do it this morning, but I lost the time to look up the pronunciation.
I settled on Yurika Quell.
Yurika. I was saying Yurika in my mind, and then I was just like, is it Erica? Am I working too hard?
It's probably with Star Wars. Yeah. It's almost a Game of Thrones, too. Yeah. Of, Larry. L-A-E-R-R-I-E-Y.
Larry. So you're saying Yurika.
I say Yurika.
All right, let's say Yurika.
But Quell, we agree on
Quell,
for sure.
Quell, we're good, yeah. Quell. Yurika Quell. So Do you want me to kind of run through some of the notes that I made?
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, so formerly of shadowing of the Imperial group, when we catch up with her, she is in this camp that the New Republic has set up called Traitor's Remorse. She's kind of living through her trauma. She is telling an interrogator droid that she defected during Operation Cinder. Going through that, we learn that she grew up on a place called Gavina Orbital Station around many species, and then learned to kind of just be around humans in the Empire. We learn that she joined the Empire with the intention of getting their training and defecting to the rebellion. But then she got caught up in this philosophy that you fight for the people next to you, and she cared about the people next to her. Passing mention, we learn that she is bi or pansexual. There's not specificity, but there's a suggestion that she has partnered with more than one gender. A lot of great stuff about her having conversations with her commanding officer, wrestling through her feelings about the rebellion, that she pities them. It was really interesting. And then I kind of felt like with the story that as it played out, what we ultimately learned is that in this book, she was trying to be the leader of Alphabet Squadron, but that she ultimately really felt like a soldier waiting for orders and is afraid to take that mantle of decision making.
Yeah.
And then within all that, she's the X-Wing. She's the leader, so she gets the X-Wing. So what were your reactions to Quell?
I really liked her. Really do. I think she's a really intriguing character, especially where it ends for me. The kind of the big reveal at the end. We can talk later on about her defection.
Yeah,
like it wasn't this total like giant. Bum, bum, bum. It was like, oh wow, this is that really adds a wrinkle to this term, this idea of defecting. To see the Empire and the Rebellion through her eyes and get both perspectives was interesting. And it's weird because in this new canon era, there's a lot of we're seeing stuff through the Imperial side. We're spending more time with the Empire. Rey Sloane is motivational, but she's a villain. All these kind of things. I let's also not forget that the Palpatine's bad.
This book has, to me, one of the best balancing acts of that.
Yes.
Of like, yeah, not everybody understood, and some people just went along with it. And so much of what this book is about is being in the shadow of Palpatine and everybody going like, should I have done that?
Yeah.
Who was this guy?
Yes.
Why did he ask these things?
I feel as though not that Alexander Freed intentionally did this, but it almost like he really wanted to dive into the conversations that are on. And we've had them here in podcasts, and you can go on a real surface level the Empire. Yeah. Empire's on. You're not. Bodhi Rook just had a job, but like the end of the day, this force of evil was running it. And I almost like he was like, let me roll up my sleeves and really dive into that. And a lot of that I just learned from Quell's point of view.
Yeah.
She was a very interesting character in that regard. Quiet at times, like because she's struggling with being a leader, and you made a note about fear of decisions, that comes up a lot. I'm intrigued with that, but sometimes it didn't make her the best lead character. I don't even think she's on the cover, but she doesn't necessarily be considered the lead character. The squadron's the lead character to me. They spent just as much time with the other characters, but most of this is through her point of view.
Right. And so, the big question is framed around her. She has the primacy and recency. She's the beginning and the end. Right?
Yeah. So that's not a criticism. It's just of even her as a character. It's just like sometimes I was like, I'm waiting for her to come into her own. Like book two, like what do we got going on? But she's such a wonderful, mysterious character. So I do like her a lot.
Okay.
Do like her a lot.
I think one of the things that I forgot to make a note of that I really liked is I liked that she knew and mentioned multiple times that she was physically fragile.
Yeah.
Because it's great to just sort of decouple the idea of power from physical stature.
Right, right.
You know, and like her power comes from because she's a great pilot and a great soldier. And she is smart and organized and efficient and does her homework and all that. But also just knowing like, hey, I can't get in a fight with a big bruiser because they will just break me. And like, and this is, I need to approach G-forces and handle them right because I'm going to shatter. It's great to see what is, to me, undeniably, from the image on the cover, from everything about the character, a strong, powerful character who also has this like, this is the body I was born in.
Yeah.
It's not a physically strong body.
And that's what's very intriguing about this character. She's a leader struggling with being a leader. That's fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes there's was like, come on, you can do it. Maybe I'm just like two on her side.
Yeah.
Just get in there.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's one of the complexities of this book that I like was really represented through her and many other people where you get that sense of like, by the middle of the book, by the second act, she'll be like, yep, I'm on board.
Uh-huh.
And they had that great ongoing thing of her constantly being having to change her own phrasing because in her mind, the truth was it was a terrorist attack on the Death Star.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to change that, but it's so ingrained. I can't change the language. I'm sorry. That's the way I think of it.
Yep.
But then at the same time, giving her, I liked that she saw problems with the Empire. I like that she looked around and was like, oh, yeah, I grew up on that orbital station with lots of different species, and there's nothing wrong with that. But, the Empire is humans only. Okay. And, oh, did we really have to come down that hard on this planet and take all the resources? That kind of sucks. Maybe the Rebels have some points.
Yeah.
Because it makes her a complex, real character, right?
Yes.
Because she has a bond with her squadron leader.
Mm-hmm.
She cares about keeping the people flying next to her alive. So she sees these problems, but doesn't quite have the moral conviction to throw her entire life away to do it. And in fact, doesn't until the twist at the end where she is given the order by her commander to defect.
Yeah. And see, this is what I really.
And she asks for it, right?
Yeah,
she says, give me an order because I'm a soldier. And to me, that has that's so meaty and interesting because mm-hmm. so much of Star Wars is about choice. And it's easy to just say well, just do the right thing. But so often you find yourself okay, doing one right thing means upending my entire life.
Well, the fact that this is a defector who had all the access to the Empire, 201st Shadow Wing, it's very important and they're handling big things. And I draw, the example of Bodhi Rook is just someone who had a job just driving around. And you hear, Lost Stars has some of the stormtroopers were on the Death Star and didn't know that they blew up Alderaan. This isn't that. This is someone in it.
Yeah. Who sees it for what it is.
She's in it.
Yeah.
And,
she knows.
Yeah. And who also... I loved this idea because when the book came out, it was like an imperial defector. Okay, great. Cool. We think we know what that means. But
yeah, we played that story with Iden Versio, right?
Right,
yeah.
Right. And Boyega Finn does a little bit of that. But to have her kind of be like, oh, I meant to. And I kind of like what was around me. I didn't get to it. I'm still killing them.
Yeah.
And I didn't join them.
Yeah.
That was a great starting point for me.
Yeah. And I love that it introduces her story as... She's involved in Operation Cinder, destroying a planet.
Yeah.
She tries to stop it.
Tries to stop it.
And then we learn that the truth is she didn't.
Yeah.
That's really, really powerful.
Yeah.
And one of the things that makes this definitely the first book in a trilogy.
Yes.
Do you think she matches the X-Wing? Or is it just because she is the lead? She's the protagonist, the main protagonist, ultimately, I think.
I think in the end she will.
Because that's the ship that is...
Yeah.
The versatile, can do it all, can lead the battle.
It's the superstar, and I think she'll get to that point. Yeah, I think she right now is the least that matches the ship, but I think that, that she has to be in the X-Wing.
Yeah.
It's the top.
Yeah.
Toppermost of the poppermost, and that's where she'll end up.
All right, we're going to move on then to Wile Lark. I'm just going to get my bias out of the way. My favorite character.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was.
I'm not sure, by the way, that's not like doubting you.
Okay. I was curious if you were going to be on the same page.
All right. I like him a lot. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So he's a rebel pilot who seems like he's been serving for a while. He has the distinction of being at Endor, which gets presented to us as wow, that's really cool that you got to be at Endor.
You got to go to Endor?
Yeah. Yeah. You got to party with the Ewoks afterwards. He was a member of a group called Riot Squadron. We get to learn. I think part of it is I love his backstory.
Yeah.
That he is from a planet called, the outside, Polyneus.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have a name for their planet, didn't use that name. They just called it Home.
Home,
such a powerful idea. And that they were a society that was a little cut off and really made choices about when to use technology. It's not like they were just totally, agrarian, but they made choices about when to use technology. And when their elders, their wise people realized that the Empire was starting to destroy their environment too, they decided to send a person from each community on the planet to fight the Empire. They're called the 120.
Mm-hmm.
And Weil is one of the people that got sent. And one of the reasons that he got sent is one of the things to do with your free time on home is to fly these specific beasts of burden, and that you bond with them. You create this organic relationship, and he became a great intuitive flyer because of it. And then we get to see when he's up there flying, he talks to his ship. He values droids. He tries to make that organic bond with non-organic things. He clearly values connections, and he's got this great through line of, hey, this has been great. I did my part.
Yeah.
I love my friends. I want to go home. It's so great. He feels compelled to stay, and Weil is the A-Wing.
He is the A-Wing, and the youngest of the bunch, too, right?
Yeah. That gets played up a lot. That is like, are you extra positive? Are you naive?
Yeah.
Or are you just young?
I think all of it. Yeah, no, I really do love this character. I think he has one of my favorite moments in the book, which is talking directly to Shadow Wing, that really weird conversation, eerie kind of conversation, but shows what he was. And he seems to constantly make the decision. You talked about the connection with others, to help others. Like that's him and Chas have that kind of problem because it comes out of him like needing to get her out of there. So, time and time again, he was the one that popped the most for me. So when Will or Weil Lark shows up on paper, I was like, I like this kid. Peppy, like the A-Wing.
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of forward momentum to him. And I think he touched on a lot of things that we've seen in Star Wars characters before. Like there's a little bit of the good old Joff Sea Striker from the Claudia Gravers in him. There's a little bit of like Luke in A New Hope. Like what? Totally. I can bullseye womp rats.
Yeah.
But just there's something so different about that origin story, specifically that idea of here's another perspective on why you're in the rebellion.
Yeah.
Of like, I come from a place that values community, that like there's even a passage about sort of like we have homes, but we also just, if whatever's right, we just sleep at whatever person's house. That idea that those boundaries that we have in our culture of this is my home, this is my family, aren't entirely there. So, of course, what affects the galaxy affects him. So it's like this kind of big, open-hearted culture that he comes from, even extending to, you know, there's that great moment where he's talking to his A-Wing and you can be like saying, we're going to make it through this. We're going to get out of this. And then he accidentally leaves his channel open and everybody laughs at him.
Yep.
And that's really funny. But then you start to realize like, okay, if this is what allows him to be an amazing pilot, because he tries to connect with this machine and listen to its groans and its strains and its pops, you know?
Yeah.
That just makes him
work for Han Solo.
Yeah, work for Han Solo. Yeah. It gets into that, like, valuing connection and being organic.
It was great. Yeah, you touched on it. The you know, you're joining the Rebel Alliance, and a lot of it is very clear why some of them do. But to come from a place that could have stayed out, but then the fight found them. The Empire builds a space station above them and starts destroying their environment, their beasts, everything. And then they were like, all right, we've got to join and we're going to send these tributes here. Like that's unlike any rebellion origin story I've had, because then it does come off as like, go do this. And then if you survive, you've helped defend the galaxy, which means defend us. And you get to come home, capital H.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, it's not that he's like, I just like everyone. I want to keep fighting. He wants to go home.
Yeah.
But still can't. And that's unlike, I'm trying to think of any rebel origin story. And I haven't seen one or heard one like that.
Yeah. And of course, he comes to this idea of like, well, OK, they're my family, too, now Alphabet Squadron. So this is a version of being home. But also through the book, it adds so much punch to that idea of, hey, is the war over?
Yeah.
How am I going to know when the war is over? Because as soon as it is, I'm going home. You know, and having a character that is as noble and committed as him is like, I'm not going to go until it's done. But what is the definition of done?
Yeah.
Am I going to be mopping up random moffs hiding in a sector with a broken down Star Destroyer 15 years from now?
Yeah.
Like that gives him even more punch for me.
Yeah.
A-Wing. Does he match the A-Wing?
Oh, totally.
Right. fast flying fast darting flight. Can dart in and help others, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Support ship.
Support ship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Lithe and speedy.
Yeah. I like yep. that a lot.
Lithe Lark. There we go. And now we're going to move on to Nath Tencent. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite? And are we going to discover a favorite? And if so, is it Nath?
There's a lot that you would think it's Nath because he's the oldest of the bunch, though he's only 37 in the story.
Yeah, that grizzled weirdo. Yeah, can we make the grizzled weirdos a little older, please?
No, no. I don't necessarily know if he's my favorite. Actually, he's intriguing in the fact that he's for hire. And I like that. It's really interesting because now I can't trust him. So he flies the Y-Wing. So that's my favorite ship.
Yeah, yeah.
He represents a lot about the wiring, old and might fail you.
Yeah.
But you need it there to get the job done.
But it can take a lot of hits. Yeah. So he's a corrupt Imperial. He defected to the Rebellion, but it's implied that in his time with both the Empire and the Rebellion, he was still a little bit of a scoundrel, did some things for personal motivation along the way. His squadron was killed by Shadowwing, so he was kind of in the story for money and vengeance. There's parts where it's mysterious exactly what his motivation was. He ultimately does kind of deceive the squadron and put him in a little bit of danger so that he can both get dirt on Quell to figure out her full truth and to kill the leader of Shadow Wing, grandmother, Shakara Nuris, I believe. And he's a twist to me on all the scoundrels. Ryan Johnson talks about how he wanted DJ to look like he was going to be a scoundrel with a heart of gold, like Han and Lando. And like, no, he's just a scoundrel.
Just a scoundrel, yeah.
And it's an interesting question for Nath. He's like a scoundrel with a heart of pyrite? The jury's out. So how did you feel about his ultimate loyalty?
This being a trilogy, I don't, my prediction would, that he's not sticking around here, that he's going to make some decisions that will take him out of the group. But him doing a lot of things for money doesn't seem to be, that's what he said. It's not quite a heart of gold. He doesn't seem like a bad guy. It's the way of the galaxy. His job, what he was taking when they found him is he was using his Y-Wing to protect, pirates or whatever it was,
Yeah.
So he's not stealing, he's not out there smuggling. He's at least this particular time. So I'm intrigued by what he could represent going forward. His mission when he goes off in the middle of it all to get that information and on Yerika Quill and also kill the top Imperial in this story.
Yeah.
Again, it's like he's good and bad in one moment.
Yeah.
Not even bad, but just like, what are you doing? And he's saying he's being paid off from someone on the inside. I just think there's a lot of great story possibilities.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like, and we'll talk about this a little bit when we dive into themes, but I feel like a little bit of what's at stake in this book is, are you doing things for yourself or for the group that you are part of? And I like that he is just kind of totally clear with himself of like, oh, no, I like the group. Yeah. I'll do what's good for the group, but I'm also always going to do what's good for me. Right. And sometimes I got to do them both at the same time, and I'll try to make it work.
There you go.
Not my problem.
I'll see what's on the other side for you. Yeah. I'll let you know.
And Y-Wing does make sense for the Y-Wing. I do think is the sturdy middle-aged vehicle.
Yep.
It's old, it's taking a lot of hits, it can take more,
been through a lot,
it's gonna limp along,
yeah,
and drop some bombs.
Yep.
Moving on to Chastnachatic is how I have been choosing to say that. She is a Thelan, at least partially, with some amount of ambiguous lineage. I believe that's the species of Rystal Saunt.
Yeah.
Making their grand. This species has been appearing a lot for what was a backup singer in the Return of the Jedi Special Edition.
Yeah.
She was a part of Hound Squadron with Rebellion. She's really defined by a lot of different things, but really like this idea that she has music that she listens to while flying. To really keep her in kind of the rhythm and keep her in the right headspace. We get the real sense that she's had a rough life. And I would say even to kind of, I felt like some things were being implied that we didn't want to be to dwell on directly in a Star Wars novel, but were implied that she had a particularly rough life with abuse and her own choices taken away.
Yeah.
Yeah, her autonomy taken away.
Yeah.
One of the cool things I thought was that she met Jyn Erso briefly. And then eventually watched a holo of Jin's famous scene in Rogue One, inspiring people to fight the Death Star, and kind of became obsessed with the story of Jin Erso.
I love that.
And this seems to be driving her to want to have to leave behind a story of her own.
Yeah.
And you get the sense that she maybe wants to die.
Comes up.
But she wants to die only if it will leave a good story.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just powerful.
Really
dark stuff.
Yeah. No, it speaks to what's not there more than what's there. You know, like the stuff you talked about in the past, and comes up a lot. Yeah. The stuff with Will Lark is great stuff about the choice, taking away the choice, and he saves her, right? He saves her. So, you know, I don't disagree with her at all. I get what's going on, but it's like, I want her to move past that, you know, Jin.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's and the Jin stuff, and when she meets Leanna Halleck, it's during some of the stuff from Rebel Rising, that era. There's nothing specific, but that's the Beth Revis book, is the era that she met her. So that's, I love that time. I love this time period, right? So I think it's interesting that she hero worships Jin, because that's a good hero to have. But then you're misinterpreting the end, or it doesn't have to be your end. And so I think, let's say, she's not necessarily my favorite character, but I always, every time it came up, the layers being peeled back were the most, to me, the most realistic in the story.
Yeah. I feel like there are a lot of characters in general pop culture like her. Like, I listen to music. I kind of have punk, I don't give a damn hair and attitude, and snarky and coming with a great insult, and feel it seem like I'm living life. But to get to sort of like the truth of that, of like some of that is coming from, you know, feeling like your control has been taken away and wanting to get your control back and live life your way, even if that means dying when you don't necessarily have to, but just because that's the way you want to go out.
Yeah.
You know, that to get into those deeper true stuff behind, like in real life, why people started having punk hair is because it's my hair and I can control it, and everything else other people are trying to control.
Yeah.
You know, so to get into those roots, I thought was really great. Do you think she matches the B-Wing?
She does. In terms of it's a, you know, this kind of different, unique vehicle that not everyone can understand and not everyone can control.
It slides around in weird, different formations. So you don't know what you're dealing with.
You can't do it. I absolutely think she does. She ready. And a little bit of her just, talk about another different origin point to the rebellion. It's simple. Like she sees Jin and inspired, right? But really, no. Like she's here for she's here for the Rebel Alliance, but she's here for the very deeply personal reasons.
Right.
Another interesting take on the start to your Rebel Alliance days.
Now you have in your past lives been a DJ. You've had a strong connection to music.
Yeah.
Did rocking out in the cockpit make sense to you? Did it work for you?
Yeah, I did love it. I loved it. I love when they hear it. I love when they play the song again later on towards the end, right there for her. Because I didn't think of it in terms of right away, and what you just described is this could very easily be, I turn on my music and that's who I am. It really goes, Alexander Freed does a great job going beyond that. But in Star Wars, that's really, we don't get a lot of music. And there's some new styles of music she talks about.
Right.
One of them's like a heavy metal genre, and I love that. That's a really interesting little new canon tidbit.
Yeah, I think another big theme is story, and even the music is like the, some of these are from cultures that aren't here anymore.
Yeah,
that got wiped out by the Empire. So it's paying tribute to that idea of stories living on afterwards, and dovetails with everything else going on with her. Down to our final member of Alphabet Squadron, Kairos.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month.
That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, Kairos.
Kairos. Yeah. Bandaged and masked, tall, powerful mystery woman. She's got a bowcaster. She is deadly and mostly silent. There's a great part where she brutally slaughters some stormtroopers, making a point to do awful things to their heads and faces. So people are rightfully a little scared. And then she tells an ambiguous story about her life, using just drawing pictures in dirt, which is amazing. And then she does finally speak to Wile Lark and just says the Emperor's shadow is long.
Yeah.
And then by the end, we do see that she is willing to both drink and dance with her squadron, which suggests that she is growing close to them.
Yub nub. I'll tell you, because the book, I probably spent a good portion of this book thinking she was a wrapped up Wookiee. I really did, because the stuff she's done, she's so violent. But I don't have that feeling anymore. Really interesting character.
Yeah,
it's really interesting character. The what she does, the way she's gets Nath here, she's keying that.
Yeah,
I think she's the one that basically says, "You know, we'll pay you." Like, we don't know their conversation.
Right,
if there was a conversation, the violence. And then she has that interaction with Eureka, right? She jumps her a little bit, like to early on in the story, to like basically, you know, don't mess up. And then U-Wing, it's like the U-Wing. It's just like, you need the U-Wing. It's a big support ship.
Yeah.
It shows up out of nowhere. And no one knows its history.
a little metatextual. Yeah. I think she's a great match for the U-Wing. Were you wanting her story to be more fleshed out, or were you being like, ooh, I'm happy to leave the mystery for it to unfold in future books?
I think I'm happy to leave the mystery. When she started using, writing the story, a picture in the dirt and all that kind of stuff, she seems to be just kind of Nath got some knowledge. She's old, crusty, he's been around, but she seems to have at times the most knowledge of the galaxy.
Yeah.
You know, especially around the Jedi Temple stuff. That great sequence, one of my favorite sequences in the book.
Absolutely.
Where I do believe Luke shows up for a second.
Really?
I think that's Luke.
Doing the flyby?
Do the flyby.
That would not be a surprise. Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't have Lor San Tekka hanging out going, nope, nothing here.
Yeah.
I thought it was Luke.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's really cool.
Anyway, so she just that's what's intriguing. Whatever she's been through, I'll find out in time.
Yeah. Did you piece anything together or make a theory about her story? Because it is described very ambiguously, and even our characters don't fully understand it.
No, I mean, for some reason, I went to. It's almost like she it's cut from the Partisan or Cloud Rider cloth to me.
Yeah.
So something bad really happened, and that's why she's here.
Yeah, one of the symbols she draws, it reminded me a little bit of Crimson Dawn, but I don't know if it was meant to be Crimson Dawn. Other people might feel strongly like, of course, that is Crimson Dawn.
Yeah.
But there's a great passage where Erica Quell talks about taking out Crimson Dawn, so I feel like she would have recognized that and responded to it.
That's true.
But who knows? But yeah, it is just like a... You're talking all about all of these different approaches to why you joined the Rebellion.
Yeah.
And then just the big picture, she's like, look... ancient happy society, then no bad horror death from the sky. Now I'm here. It gets to maybe classic rebellion joining story of the Empire messed up my homeworld and I'm gonna mess them up.
Yeah.
All right, so that's a look at the actual Alphabet Squadron, the main characters, a bunch of other side characters. But I wanted to talk a little bit, they'll pop up as we do, about some of the major themes moving this book forward. I think one of the major themes is the why of Operation Cinder. It's just not even a theme. It's an engine.
Yeah.
The big bad of this particular book, Grandmother.
Yeah.
Is wondering what it's all about. Quell acted it out and doesn't know why she did because she knows she shouldn't have. Right.
Yeah.
So what were your thoughts on that?
You know, we were talking on the main show this week about, people want connections, but I want connections that mean something. And here is something that really, it was great to see Operation Cinder from Battlefront 2, from Shattered Empire, and they talk about Imperial commanders switch sides and helped on Naboo. Yay, Inferno Squad.
Yeah.
But to get down to why it's revealed to me, it's all the way at the end, and the Sentinel droid coming in, this haunting thing, and that's the thing that gave the order to all these Imperial commanders and for Grandmother to never, to never get the answer. She's trying in her dying moments.
Yeah.
Was it all worth it? She's saying, was it all worth it?
Yeah.
And this is the ghost of the Emperor, basically, in weird droid form, whatever it is, wraith form, not just like, there's no answer. And I mean, there is in the sense of, you know, we get the thought of the Emperor was just a very petty, burn it all down.
Vindictive, cruel person, yeah.
Person. But to see it from this perspective, because the Battlefront 2, sorry, you see it from... Versio's father, Garrick Versio, like it's duty. This is what we're doing.
It's,
you destroyed our homeworld, but we have to do it.
And the Sentinel droid tries to spin the argument. Mm-hmm. It's, the Sentinel droid is just the Emperor's recorded face, right? That it's to show Imperial might because the galaxy has forgotten, right? So it is. It's sort of the argument of the Death Star of like, look, once we blow up a planet, they'll all get in line.
Yeah.
But then that argument is kind of stretched because like, all right, but this is a loyal Imperial world who isn't fighting back at all. So like it works in the context of Battlefront 2, but it's great to see it just totally examined of like, oh, that doesn't track because we already did blow up Alderaan and that in fact that made things much worse for the Empire.
Yeah.
We've tried this and all, what are we getting out of just wiping out planets and why is your home planet on the list, dude? You know, like, I love that. To me, it got to this idea of the individual versus the group too, of like, for a military to function, particularly like at least in the storytelling of the Empire, right? It's unity. You are just, you're just another piece of wood being moved on a board, right? And that your piece of wood can disappear and another one can replace you.
Yeah.
And that all in order to have that efficiency, that all depends on you assume the order makes sense.
Yeah.
And I love that Grandmother was dyed in the wool. I've been with this since it was the old Republic and I was fighting the separatists. They're all anarchists to me.
I don't care. Yeah.
That's such a great thing that threads through it. The separatists, whatever. Yeah. I don't care. Whatever you're calling yourself now, New Republic, Rebellion, you're all the same to me.
Yep.
To have somebody that unquestioning that, of course, the order from above makes sense, so I will execute it. That
beautiful haunting scene. There are a lot of great haunting scenes of the Sentinel just stalking around of like, why is it still there if it's not saying anything? And her begging it.
Yeah.
Why? And dying, not knowing. It just really gets to this idea of like, well, there's not a good answer.
Yeah. No, there's not.
There's nothing that justifies Operation Cinder. Yeah. There's not a good, you're not going to get a good answer because there isn't one. In a little bit for like ITO, the droid that we can talk about a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Offers to Quell right at, near the end there that it is just because anybody who wants this much control and this much power is and wants to terrorize people who disobey him, wants to terrorize people who do obey him.
Yeah.
Just petty and vindictive and wants people to be terrorized.
Yeah.
And like, that's a great real world analysis of, well, why did somebody do something just petty and vindictive? What could it be? And like, well, it's probably because they're suffering from issues that make them petty and vindictive.
Yeah. They said the emperor had no secret brilliance or foresight. You just wanted to watch the world burn.
Yeah. Know? Which then like you pull back to the larger, Star Wars headcanon of like these people in this book are like, hey, some people think there's a force thing, whatever.
Yeah.
But like from our perspective is like, is that a desperate attempt on the Emperor to increase the power of the dark side by just creating that death in that chaos? Is that the tactic, or is it truly like, hey, if I die, Gallius Rax, go here and rebuild in the unknown regions and this galaxy, F you, I'm burning you.
Game over. Burn the chessboard down.
Yeah. So, I love that strings through of having people really have to question.
Again, just more than a connection. It's just, like you said, the why and just like every piece he had from the previous established Operation Cinder stuff was he just used so well.
Yeah, yeah. Another big theme that spoke to me is the difference between the Empire and the Rebellion / New Republic in terms of the tactics and philosophy. And that when I thought about this, it's what really opened up the book for me of going back to when Jennifer read the news and said, Alphabet Squadron, it's one of each, you know, because from the alphabet. Mm-hmm. Where I was like, why?
Yeah.
The idea that the Rebellion, the New Republic, values diversity.
Yeah.
They want everybody to work together, but they value the individuality within that. What a great way to represent it, to have five very different ships flown by five very different people, ships that shouldn't fly. It's kind of dangerous for them to fly together. It's a great analogy for like, well, how do you have organization and kind of forward movement and unity in a military, in a government, but still go through the challenge of respecting everyone's diversity and assuming that there's value in their diversity instead of from the Imperial perspective, diversity is weakness.
Yeah. We don't want that.
Yeah.
The pilots last 7 months.
Yep. That's fine. Yeah, we get it gets reflected by grandmother going, separatists, New Republic. Yeah. It's all the same. I do my job, which is to kill them.
Yeah.
That's it.
Kill them all.
Won't question it.
Yeah.
Did that speak to you? Did that resonate for you?
Yeah. It's one of those things that's like very, you know, clear and fun to explore, get into. This is this is going back to New Hope and looking at the Empire and going, all right, I see what they were doing. Now, more aliens started to come into the picture, literal aliens. And I'm looking at you, is what we're saying there. But
Marco.
Yeah. Ori Marco, indeed. I really, because even in there's a kind of an in the Alphabet Squadron is a joke almost in an end.
Yeah.
And playing with it and because I was in, we were on the same boat. I didn't the title was not grabbing me and I think to me in another era of Star Wars storytelling, this would have just been a cool story of
they have cool adventures. Blow things up. Yeah.
And this took it took its time getting everyone together because they're so different.
Yeah.
But in the end result, it wasn't just a high five. We won, you know, they didn't even win clear out, you know?
Yeah.
It's a long form lesson there about the mantra of the Rebel Alliance.
Right. And I like that it is a journey for them to try to learn about one another so they can effectively work together. So it gets to a great, from a certain point of view, empathy, things that Star Wars cares a lot about in its themes. And I like that Quell is trying to bend and trying to do a rebel tactic by improvising.
Yes.
when she decides to blow up the one Tabana gas pod, which again, relatable, because I've done that a ton in Rogue Squadron. It's one of the assignments in the GameCube one. And it literally blows up in her face. She accidentally creates the exact same kind of hellish firestorm that she was commanded to. But this time she did it because she was trying to think like a rebel and trying to save Chass.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's some great complexity and poetry to that of like, is it just right to think like a rebel and improvise, or is it dangerous?
Yeah, because there's some really stuff early on. She's just on a simple level struggling with the Rebel Alliance and their makeshift plans, and in discussing with Harrison Dula this plan, there's a line about that sounds like a plan for the Rebel Alliance.
Yeah,
means it's not perfect.
Yeah,
but we're gonna figure out how to make it work.
We have no resources, and we accept that everything, no matter how much we study, is gonna change.
Yeah,
yeah, it is. It gets back to that. Crucial, it's targeting computer versus use the force. It's let go of rigidity and control, and we'll find a way out.
We'll find a way out. So it's an interesting comment on it.
Yeah.
Constantly coming back to her point of view.
I want to talk a little bit about that idea of change, because a lot of these characters are wrestling with, can they change? And in particular, this is where I wanted to touch on ITO, the Imperial torture droid. To be clear, the floating ball from A New Hope with the syringe arm, right?
Yep.
That has been reprogrammed to be a therapist. And asks very gently, in a gentle tone, a couple of times, "Do you need any help torturing anyone?" Which suggests that the droid has not truly changed. I think that might be one of my top five things in this book, easy.
I think I was going to say this is one of my favorite droids introduced, because every book, every story, it's a Star Wars thing, right? You got a droid.
Yeah.
And in Blackspire, we like Pook.
Yeah,
but Pook starts off in a similar point of view and that we've seen before.
Yeah.
No, when you realize right from the beginning it's a torture droid, that's just a cool, there you go. There's those connections, but what's behind it? It's the most vibrant, common sense speaking therapy droid. It's got everything. It kind of still wants to kill. You know, I used to play in a band. You need someone to play bass? I got it. Good. I really love this droid.
Yeah.
And what it represents, and that they could reprogram. What a symbol, reprogramming a torture droid.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was definitely one of my favorites. Wrapping up our theme conversation, because we have been talking about this here book for quite a while. I like this big idea of what is the story of you. When each of the main characters, like at different points in the book, kind of finally broke down and told their compatriots as close as they could to their truth, because it wasn't always the full truth or even the truth.
Yeah.
But it was the story they wanted to represent. Even had the, and this is the story they told. There's a lot of talk about Imperial propaganda within the book, and that being like, that's the story you grew up with. There's the story that is partially true and partially not, that Chass has made up about Jyn Erso. We even get that great passage where Hera talks about like, all of my memories with my family on the Ghost are like my real memories, but they're also starting to feel different because I have turned them into morality tales to inspire troops. So I have turned my life into a collection of stories, which from doing stand-up comedy and storytelling, I can relate to. It's still real, but it starts to take on this little bit of legend quality because you've spun it for other people for their benefit.
Yes. Whether it's just to entertain or teach, yes.
Yeah.
That happens a lot.
Yeah, right?
So you'd be like, wait, what was the real story?
Yeah, well, did I really? It was high, yeah. So did that resonate for you? Or did that?
No, because the idea of what brings you to this rebellion in Star Wars and the fact that each one of them is different, it's some of my favorite moments when they start to open up. And it's very clear, you know, and with Yurika, especially because of, here was the story she told, and then here's the actual story, like powerful. But I love seeing different ways to come to this fight and why you should come to the fight. And maybe sometimes the reason isn't great, but you're still there fighting. Can you learn that on the way? Stuff with Nath. So, your story. What is your truth? What is your actual story? What brings you to these things? And uh, I would not have expected to get that kind of stuff from cool ships flying around.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it even ties into, in a really neat way, what is going on between Chass and Wile. Well, from like a, hey, just keep your compatriots alive. He chooses to shoot off her cannon so she can't fight anymore in her viewing.
Right.
Takes her choice away, but, and she tries to talk to him about it, right?
Yeah.
And there's those great passages about, he said he won't take my choice away again, but I know he doesn't understand.
Right, right.
And it invites you to wonder for yourself exactly what it is that you feel like.
Right.
He gets not to take that action, but for her, I think it is about that. Like, I want to craft the story of what I'm doing when I die.
Yeah.
And that's specifically what you're taking away from me is my choice of when.
When to go.
When to die and what story I am telling with my own death.
Yeah.
Which that's like, yep, again, this could be ships and exploding, but there's a real choice to be like, let's get into some darker truths of being a soldier and constantly putting your life on the line.
And what's the, you know, they always say when you learn your screenwriting 101, any action or fight sequence is really, you're learning about the character in those moments. It's not all zim, zam, pow, and pop, and boom. Then we go to lightsaber fights. What do we learn from? I enjoy a good flippity fight.
Yeah.
What are we learning there? And this book, he absolutely hits that every time. Every skirmish. I learn more about the individuals just as much as the girl.
Yeah, and the choices they make. Yeah. Let's move on to some canon connections. I got a list here. We don't need to dive deeply into all of them, but see which ones light your fire can. Like gas over Pandem Nye, which explodes your fire. This is one that grabbed me. On page 176, I wrote it down.
Yeah.
They confirm that the ships are based on the High Galactic alphabet. Which is, this is a question that comes up a lot of, hey, if the language is Orabesh, why is the ship's A-Wing? Why is R2-D2 B-Wing? And the loose canon answer, now completely concrete.
Right.
There are other alphabets, and our alphabet exists in Star Wars, and it's called High Galactic. And for whatever reason, long ago, these ships were named after that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I pulled up I was like, what page? I didn't note that in my pages.
But did you like that? Yeah, just like, hey, let's they're asked and answered.
Yes, because that's one of those things that get just so tired of, not tired like, but like tired of like hearing of like, why in the New Hope? Well, George just he was right in it.
Because he hadn't made up Orabesh yet, is the real world answer, right?
Because I grew up with Obi-Wan turning off the power, not the Orabesh word. So it's always fun to have that answered.
The second canon connection I wrote down is one that's just not acknowledged
not
at all.
There.
Great to spend quality time with Harrison Dula. Great to get references to Star Wars Rebels. This is years after Kanan has passed.
Yeah.
So unless Twi'leks are pregnant for years, Jason Syndulla, their son, should have been born long ago.
Yeah.
Not a mention.
Not a word.
Not a whisper.
Nothing.
Of Jason Syndulla. How do you feel about that? What do you think the deal with that is?
What do we think, Dave Filoni? What do we think? What have you done, Dave? I think wherever Zeb and like Chopper are, I think they're watching.
Okay,
they're
on Uncle Duty.
Yeah, because Callus
Chopper.
Then Callus and Zeb go. Zeb should we go and have a no Zeb? I always get confused because Zeb Seneska. Go up there like a little adventure.
They go and find the last of the Lasat.
Yeah. I think Jason's there.
You think Jason's there? Okay. I think from a practical canon perspective, there isn't a decision on what to do about Jason Syndulla. So there's a little bit of just like, look, we don't need to know where he is. Just let's not muddy the fields. Don't have Hera even think about her son.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause
he's somewhere and he's fine. Don't worry about it.
We want to hear more about Star Wars, mothers in Star Wars. We totally do. Hera is now a literal mother after being a figurative one for so long and still being one, by the way. But yes.
Oh, where Dave. Is Jason? Hashtag where is Jason? Start it going.
Oh, Dave.
Another detail I liked is after the Emperor died, planets revolted.
Yeah.
Which isn't brand new, but I can't remember if it's been super specific in Aftermath. But like to me, it just like it so... celebrates that special edition added scene of the cheering crowds on Coruscant, toppling the statue and just moving the stormtrooper around through the crowd. I just really like that that's part of the Empire crumbling of, hey, the head's cut off and suddenly everybody rushes out to the streets and starts pushing over the stormtroopers.
Yeah, it reminds me, there's some stuff in the beginning of Aftermath, too, about that. Yeah. Yeah, but this is a Coruscant scene. You want to see that played out all the time.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about the Sentinels, but I wanted to ask about, there's a passage somewhere about there are lies about Palpatine being immortal. People literally say they feel like they're being haunted by him, that they're still in his shadow. Do you feel that is all just metaphoric? That's how these people would feel. It makes total sense for Alexander Freed to write it. Yeah. And then it just comes off is possibly something more given that Palpatine is returning.
I think so. I don't, if this was 2015, we'd be like looking this for clues. It could be, but I think it's more just what you're saying. And then the Sentinel droids I'm a huge fan of Sentinel droids. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
If it takes it to a weird sci-fi world, I don't dislike it, but I'm not hung up on it.
Yeah.
But this is the best use of the Sentinel droids in the new Star Wars canon.
It's so creepy that they have no more message, but they lurk around looking at you.
They're just there.
Expressionless. And they're not even staying in the corner. They look at you.
Yeah.
So creepy. So Palpatine. Like, why wouldn't you feel haunted by that? So this is just a quick one. I really like that Cantonica pod races were mentioned.
Right.
Yeah.
I want to see some of those.
That sounds like great fun, especially that since we know by the time of Black Spire, the New Republic has outlawed pod racing.
Yeah.
So enjoy it while you can, people of the galaxy. We talked a little bit about Shakira Nerys being a vet of the Clone Wars. The ship that Hera is flying around is a Clone Wars airship.
Right.
How do you feel about that continuation?
I love that connection. It reminds me of, she probably had a couple drinks with Yularen at some point in her life. I love it because it goes to the little joke I always have about, the Republic springs up, Galactic Empire springs up overnight, and there's always already got uniforms and staffing and everything. Yeah. So it's people like her that just, this is what they did, this is what you did.
It's a natural transition.
Natural transition indeed. So it's always fun. I love the references because it's only 20 years.
Yeah.
And then there was one point they talk about how, Palpatine ruled for just over 20 years, but they use it in the sense of how long. And I'm like, wow, grand scheme of things. Yeah, that's a long time under a tyrant, but it's only 20 years.
Yeah, and that doesn't even count the 10 years where he was the Supreme Chancellor.
Yeah,
It's just counting the horrible, violent dictatorship. While we're talking about the Emperor, you mentioned this briefly, and I wanted to touch on it. There's a discussion about how his various lies and propaganda about the Jedi don't entirely track, which I think is a great way to address some of the real world questions that we have about it and make sense of them in world that he initially tells everyone, as we see in Revenge of the Sith, that they revolted and left him scarred and deformed because that's the truth he needs. And then a little while later, he makes it, you know what? They were never even that big of a deal.
What are you talking about? Jedi? What?
Yeah. And I think a lot of canon has been doing a good job of saying, like, hey, remember that this is a repressive dictatorship that was known for murdering people who got out of line. If you were a person who was alive during the Clone Wars and you met a teenager who's like, what about the Jedi? You can't be at the bar going, they were real. Yes. In fact, one busted in here once, had a purple light. You would die.
Yeah.
And it's gaslighting.
Yeah.
Right. So people start to be like, who only saw them once from afar, like, well, maybe there were just like cheap magicians with glow sticks
a little
telling everybody the lie that we should all believe their religion, that there's a unifying force and it tells them what to do. To me, that just all gets into like, this is very believable even within 20 years.
Because it was it's not that George didn't care about the answers, but I think George probably had some of these answers in his head.
Yeah.
And it's just playing upon that. It's connecting back to this idea and how it makes sense. It used to be the joke. It used to be the joke during the prequel times. I used to probably tell my friends, like, oh, what happened? In 20 years, I just destroyed all the tapes. Well, the story's been changed. And this is what Palpatine, and they believed it, and they had to. And what you just said, Even if you didn't, you had to. So it all starts to become real realistic.
Yeah, yeah. And I like that there's this peek into this book. It's like, he's dead so we can talk.
Yeah.
His two lies don't track together, yeah, they don't, do they?
Yeah, by yeah. the way.
Yeah, this is great to me.
Yeah, and goes to the idea that, again, the stuff, a lot of references of General Skywalker and... Yeah, he had a sword or something. I don't, they said he had powers.
He seemed to be real good at flying all the time, yeah. all of his victories. Yeah.
Luke Skywalker was a myth.
He lived in that religion. Weird. Yeah. There's some good discussion of ships being more difficult to pilot in the atmosphere. I know you have opinions about atmosphere.
Yeah.
Because it comes up a lot. You're like, JJ likes his ships in the atmosphere.
JJ wants to fly around on the ground. Yeah. I love that there's a battle between them. Like, there's kind of a rivalry. Those who think that, you know, what one's harder, one's easier. And yeah. then just the actual skill set needed to do both.
Right. Where you're not fighting against any gravity.
And it's not.
In space, but on the ground, you always know which way is up.
No disrespect is on. I know, like, 12-page scientific explanation of it. It's just, I got the answer.
Nice, nice. Just a few more here. There's a reoccurring joke, and I think sometimes fear, that there will be a third Death Star.
I loved it.
How did you take it?
Loved it. Laughed. Yep, we know what's coming. But also... Speaking to the idea, I mean, it could be some playing around with Legends rumors and just paying homage to those. And why wouldn't you? If one went and then all of a sudden another one was there, they got to be building another one.
Yeah, he's got to have one going. He probably got a 2-for discount, right? Yeah. I mean, on all of the Kyber crystals, right? Yeah, so I thought that was funny and also just like contributed to that sense of the very confusing unknown time in the galaxy.
Yeah.
This is a small one, but on one of the planets, we encounter a neighborhood called Little Nemovia.
You and I reacted the same. I loved it. Loved it
so much. So much. Mm-hmm. And here's my last one. You mentioned this one, too. On the Harkrova moon, there is a Jedi temple with a rebel cachet. And that's what spurs a lot of these Jedi conversations between Alphabet Squadron. And one night, the temple seems to make a ringing noise and then performs what I interpreted as... A brief history of the galaxy searching for the balance in the Force.
Yep. It was great.
Yeah, it showed the galaxy as it was, replete, and then showed the devastation and horror of the dark side ravaging the natural world, and then it showed peace and balance.
Yeah.
Good job, Luke.
Yeah, I wish we could have...
and Anakin.
Yeah, seen that. That's a very Clone Wars or Rebels animated sequence.
Right?
Yeah, I would like to see that. It was great. It was beautiful. Reading it was beautiful. That whole sequence is great.
Yeah.
The Jedi Temple, yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like it has any more meaning, or do you just feel like it is there so that these characters, while being kind of gritty and grounded, are still attached to this larger world, so it still feels like Star Wars?
Whether they know it or not, you know what I mean? Because
we do.
Yeah, we do. It's there. It's present. And we hear a lot of, you know, a lot of people do want more Jedi and Sith stuff directly in new stories. And I think you're going to get that. And I think a lot's there. But this is a reminder of that it's always there. And it's always working.
Yeah.
In this story, in this galaxy.
Yeah. And even with all this horror, the Force or that temple seems to be under the opinion that with Palpatine gone, there is closer to balance.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Any other details or characters or ideas that you wanted to touch on?
There are a couple little notes. I loved a lot of the stuff with Hera. There was one early on about the public sentiment was right about the rebels. You know, there's some like, so this comes from the Empire. It's just Quell's mind. we talked about grandmother's view of the Emperor, what she learned. I will really love that. There was a note, Hera had says this thing, and it's kind of like a weird personal philosophy of mine, especially having been a boss in a weird kind of environment where it's like, you don't need to convince me of your problem. You need to convince me of your solution. And I'm going to put that on a poster with like a cat hanging from a thing. And then just quote Harrison Dula. I like things like that. I love you. That's why I fell in love with the character of Moff Gerard. Cause of his great men never hurry line in the novel of Return of the Jedi. So I love little morsels of business 101 knowledge. I don't know.
Yeah.
Silly little note.
That's a great one. I had a moment when I was an assistant manager of Kinko's, and orders would always get lost. And I had one really good employee who would always come to me to find the order.
Yeah.
And eventually I had to be like, hey, you can always ask me, is there something special that I might know about this order that you don't?
Yeah.
But if I say no, then I'm going to go do all the exact same things that you would to find the order. And he was like, oh, and then he came to me a while later and he's like, I felt really empowered because I didn't realize I could just do it.
Do it.
Like, yep, you can. Management from Kinko's, yeah. Ken and Harrison Dula. That's what y'all listen to Four Center for, right?
Yeah.
Some management advice. Yeah. So many great little moments that we could touch on, but I think that's a good overview of the big picture. So I want to close out our conversation with hopes or predictions, desires for the future two novels.
So, yeah, we got the big thing, and I know we didn't touch on it a ton, but the idea of this character, Devon, who ends up being Quell's former commanding officer, right?
Yeah.
He's the one that sends, so he reveals himself at the end, which
right.
was so funny because I was like, what is this character?
Yeah, what is
what
this?
What is he doing?
Yeah, because they're both really engaging stories, yeah. but at the end of the sections.
Yes,
The first section and the second. So then by the third, you're like, all right.
Yeah, something's going, little interludes, right? And he stops the character from going to, Treasonville?
Yeah, Traitor's Remorse.
Traitor's Remorse.
Treasonville is where you can have margaritas with Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah. Yeah, and so here you got this Imperial commander who has you got some intriguing layers. He was top of his game, sent her, orders her to defect, and then also stops some attacks. But it's like, what's he up to? And this confrontation to me that's going to be coming to them between maybe Quell and him, it's going to be something I think I haven't really seen in Star Wars before, because it's not just going to be fighting.
Yeah, it's emotional and philosophical because, yeah, he has stopped. He thinks Operation Cinder is too far. He thinks it's all over.
Yes.
And that's why he tells her to defect.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's no point in this way. And he's just trying to get through life. And he, in a way, he has this Jyn Erso story.
Yeah, yeah.
But from the Imperial perspective of, mm-hmm. like, I'm just trying to get through life, but everywhere I go, there's trouble. There's an Imperial who's become a gangster who wants me to rope it in, so I'll burn him down.
Yeah.
Oh, I run into this kid who's been radicalized who's going to try to bomb the New Republic. We don't need that, so I'll put a stop to that. Hey, I'm just trying to live my life in this mining town. I can't get drunk and say my true feelings out loud. And some New Republic people come here to kill me. And it's like, you know what? I thought if everybody in the Empire just said, okay, great, you won, and we walked away, New Republic would have what they want. They'd get their peace.
Right.
But there's no peace anywhere, so screw you all.
Yeah.
That's a great ending for the first book in a trilogy. And then you connected that she has this emotional relationship to it. And I also really like that Shadowing escaped. He's going to go look for Shadowing to get back in it, because then it does just, it lets you know this trilogy is going to be Alphabet Squadron versus Shadowing. Then that's the structure of this general thing. And it keeps you from spiraling into, well, is one of them one of the members of Alphabet Squadron going to become a Jedi at Luke's Temple or like, and it's just, it's just a nice way to tell you, here's what's going to happen next in the story, and here's the scope and the stake of this trilogy.
Yeah. Yeah. Alphabet Squadron versus Shadowing. I can see it on a poster now.
Yeah, yeah, for the inevitable animated series that will come to Disney Plus, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, that's our look. I could say more, but I'm not going to. I'm done.
I know a lot of you out there have read the book and you've been asking us, and some people, there were some great pleas online. Don't skip this one. We're going to get to it, and we finally got to it. So I hope you enjoyed our take on Alphabet Squadron by Alexander Freed. No word, at least that I know of when the next ones are coming out, but I know we're excited to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is our look at Alphabet Squadron. Of course, if you listen to all of this, haven't read or listened to the book and still want to, please go to Audible and that audibletrial.com/ForceCenter and grab a copy.
Don't forget to follow us on ForceCenterPod. Use the hashtag ForceCenter. Like our Facebook page. You know where the podcast is. A lot of new spots because we're through Anchor. Check it out. Just search in your favorite podcast machine. We also got merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. Patreon, Joseph. We got our goals there.
Yep. You can check out all of the goals we're building to. That's patreon.com/ForceCenter.
And don't forget to go to our own stuff like josephgrimshaw.com and kennapsack.com for wonderful things that are happening.
Yeah. And follow us on social media to see opinions about things we're eating.
A lot of things we're eating. I've got to go to a eating session tonight. We call it dinner. That is it for this week. Databank Brawl will be back in the normal every other week schedule. Star Wars Ranked coming up with Billy Patterson coming back. Some more special edition talk. So you enjoyed the first one. Look for that next week. But this has been our review of Alphabet Squadron here on Force Center.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.